Hey, Trailblazers. There's always been one stop between Houston and the Guadalupe Mountains that has mattered to me the most, and that's my stop at Mom's Kitchen Express in Van Horn, Texas. Over the years, I've told our hiking community about this little gem out in West Texas and to swing by when they're heading to the Guads for a wonderful meal. For me, it was always a joy to stop by and hear Mr. Espinosa saying, "Another one of your hikers stopped by for a meal." They had to close the restaurant down for a couple of years due to family needs, but there's some exciting news. Mom's Kitchen Express is open once again. Same wonderful recipes, and it still feels like home. And it still carries the legacy of the man who loved this land as much as we do. So if you're heading out to the Guadalupe Mountains or just passing through Van Horn, make sure you stop by for a meal and to tell them hi from the Trailblazing Texas podcast community. Mr. Espinosa, you were missed. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. All right. And just for the listeners, are there any, I don't know, like lesser known trails that maybe someone kind of wants to stay away from the crowds, or trails that you think are spectacular that maybe just doesn't get the love? And I'd like to get both of y'all's opinions on this one.
You can get both of our opinions, but I think they're probably going to be the same trail, actually. That's Turkey Pass. Turkey Pass is definitely the staff favorite as far as trails go. It goes between, it's the saddle between Enchanted Rock and Turkey Peak, which is another one of our summits in the park. And Turkey Pass goes right between the two of them. You see some really, really cool geology, and it's a lot more of an engaging hike than the Summit Trail is. Summit Trail is great. It's a destination hike. You get to the top and you feel so, so accomplished. But getting to the top can be pretty brutal. It's not always a fun trail to do because you're just watching your feet and thinking about how bad your lungs hurt. But Turkey Pass, on the other hand, is really fun to hike because it's not quite as strenuous and you get to kind of go up and down and over these massive granite slabs. It's way more engaging as a hiker to do Turkey Pass.
It has really cool spots also to get kind of to squirrel and go look at other things. Mm-hmm. And so it's good because then if you are starting to get tired, because it's also a good connecting point for other trails. If you start to get tired or if it's a hot day, there's plenty of spots to be entertained at to stop and hang out for a few minutes, take a water break. And so it's a really good spot. Obviously, yes, come and see the rock at least once and go on top, but it's actually none of our staff's favorites. We all like some of the other ones.
And most of us like Turkey Pass.
So to the listeners, and kind of just to let you know kind of behind the scenes, and this kind of leads into the next question, and I know we've kind of talked about it, but, you know, this is a part two, and this is a separate recording than part one. And right when we were about to record, there was maybe an emergency, a possible search and rescue. And so the actual next question is, you know, again, we've talked about some of this stuff, but can we just reiterate some of the safety tips that you have for hiking on granite, especially in the heat? And is there ever a possibility where we're on top of the summit, on top of Enchanted Rock, and it starts raining? We're in that stuff, I bet you, as slippery as all get out. Mm-hmm. And then what is a hiker supposed to do? Just slide down? Okay, it's not funny, but
I mean, in short, yeah, the best thing to do if you get caught on top of Enchanted Rock during a rain event, if it is lightning or thundering especially, just get on your butt and start scooching. That's it. Don't try to walk down. You're going to have further to fall, and you will fall, especially mm-hmm. if you're on the absolute top. If you're able to get down lower where you have some shelter, then try to take some shelter in the rocks. But yeah, just try to stay low. That's our only recommendation. And if it starts sprinkling while you're on your way up the rock, please, 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 don't think to yourself, I made it this far and I'm already wet. I'm just going to go the rest of the way. Don't do that. Just come down. Please come down. Please do not keep hiking. We see a lot of injuries whenever we get rainfall. And, you know, it's a perpetual question of what is safe for staff as well. So we won't run up after you if it's like the middle of a thunderstorm. We can't go up after you, even if you twist your ankle or even if you hurt your leg. Like there is no way for us to get up there safely during an extreme weather event, which means you will have to wait it out. If you go up there, it is at your own risk every single time, especially during a rain event.
Another thing to keep in mind, we get a lot of feedback, even if it's a post-rain event and we still have the trails closed. It might not be actively raining, but the rock is still wet. And so a lot of times rangers will go out there afterwards, we'll have our binoculars. We're looking for these streak water patterns that we're used to seeing to see if there is a safe path that people can navigate up without having to cross that. Because even if, like, even we have better grade hiking shoes than hiking boots, probably than the average visitor. Even if I step slightly in a puddle or slightly in Sandy Creek while crossing, my shoes remain wet for several yards ahead. So even if you hit one of those puddles, it's still dangerous. And so it's not us trying to be the fun police. We're genuinely trying to keep you safe. We're not closing the rock for funsies. So when we say the rock is closed or we're advising against it, we really, really mean it.
Hannah, I think you nailed it. And I don't know, because I can only speak for myself. There was a time in my beginning journey of hiking and backpacking that I would have kept going. And I would have done this or done that, just not being experienced. But you said it perfectly. If something happens to me, and like say I don't turn around, I'm putting other people in danger, right? Because there is a responsibility for people in the park to have to go rescue me at some point, pull me out of the situation. So, you know, to the listeners, and hopefully this is something that you've already thought of and go, yeah, I would never push that envelope to endanger other people. But that's the reality, that some of the decisions that we make as hikers and backpackers jeopardize the safety of others, you know? So
it's a great point. And we are happy to circle back to heat safety. It's our,
I was going to say,
go to down. tips for hiking in the heat on the granite. So things to remember. Number one, it's hot from the sun, right? You are receiving solar radiation as you hike up. Number two, it's also hot from the granite. So the granite retains heat and it radiates it up back at you. So it's like walking a convection oven pretty much the whole way. There is no shade on the summit trail between the bottom and the top. There's maybe one place where there is shade. And when you're going to start feeling really bad is about three quarters of the way up. Three quarters of the way up is extremely exposed. There is nowhere for you to hide. There is no cool spot to wait in for your family to come down. You're going to find yourselves really hot really fast. So the best way to be prepared for a hike, number one, is going to be carrying water with you. I know it's only 1.6 miles round trip. I know that doesn't seem like a lot. I've been guilty of it. Claire's been guilty of it. We've all been like, it's a short hike. I'm pretty well acclimated. I can do it without water. But I'm telling you not to. I'm asking you as a friend and as a ranger not to do that. Because so much of the time it's people who aren't carrying water, who aren't prepared, who either experience heat exhaustion because they're super dehydrated from the day before. Even if you drank a full like 8-ounce water bottle on your way to the park and you feel like that's good enough for you, that's not. It's not. Especially if you didn't drink any water the day before or if you went drinking the night before, like your body is not prepared for this kind of exposure. Two, it's the people who aren't prepared who get lost on trail and then they wander off summit trail, they go down the wrong side. They find themselves somewhere between Echo Canyon, Turkey Pass, or forbid, the backside of the trail. And if you get lost without water at Enchanted Rock, that's a real recipe for disaster. So carrying water with you, even if you feel like you don't need it, carrying more than enough. We recommend 32 ounces per hour per person, especially during our peak heat seasons. So June through September, pretty much, you want to have more than enough water with you. We also recommend carrying electrolytes, and snacks. I know that some people really are really into the super expensive electrolyte packets. Those are fantastic if you got them. If you don't got him, a Gatorade goes a long way. I've met marathon runners who swear by, like, a sweet tea after the marathon that, like, brings them back to life. I can't recommend it enough. Sugars, salts, carbs. Your body needs it. And they recommend that you rotate every 2 bottles of water with 1 electrolyte.
I think so.
For every 16 ounces of water, so 2 8-ounce water bottles, you drink 1 8-ounce bottle of electrolytes. So a Gatorade or an LMNT or Drip Drop, those are all great brands. And then salty snacks, so peanuts, trail mix, chips, just whatever it takes to keep your body moving. Again, even if 1.6 miles isn't a whole lot, worst case scenario, you got a great snack at the top. Best case scenario, that snack keeps you safe, and that's important.
What about tuna packets?
Oh my gosh, don't get me started on tuna packets, Jason. I already talked about this, but they're excellent. And then attire is the big one. I know I seem a little silly wearing my little getup even inside, but I'll forget the hat if I take it off, and I can't forget the hat. So we always try, especially if we're working in the field or if we're going out on a search and rescue, we wear long sleeves, and that gets a lot of questions. People were like, how do you do that? That looks horrible. And the honest answer is that it keeps us cooler. Like if you're letting solar radiation hit your skin directly, it's going to get really hot really fast. And the long sleeves really do keep you cooler. The UV shirts that they sell nowadays with the little hoods, whatever, those are awesome. Those are perfect. They're really lightweight. They keep the sun off of you. They're a great replacement for sunscreen. You don't have to reapply a shirt every 2 hours. That's the nice thing about wearing a shirt. And again, if something happens and you find yourself stuck out there for longer than you meant to be, having that extra sun protection is going to be really helpful. We also recommend long pants. This is not so much a heat thing as a trail thing. We do have a lot of cacti in the park and a lot of grasses and bugs and snakes. And if you fall and you hit your knee, it's going to be nice not to skin it. So we always recommend wearing long pants, even if it's the middle of the summer, which is what we are both wearing right now. And then my personal preference is to also throw on a buff, again, that keeps your skin cool because you're not exposing yourself to sun. It also distributes sweat. That's the other thing about wearing the long sleeves, the pants, and the buff, is that it distributes sweat more thoroughly so that you're staying cool and you're letting your body's natural mechanism to help you stay cool go a little bit further.
I do have a clothing hot take.
What is it?
We see a lot of people who come out in athleisure.
No black leggings.
Athleisure is good for gym and inside athletic
things. Do not wear your athleisure to the rock.
For hiking, athleisure is not the way to go. Wearing skin-tight clothing traps all of your heat inside, and it doesn't allow airflow to get to you.
Yep.
So wearing flowy pants, a flowy longer dress, if that's your thing, anything that's going to allow that air to get to you mm-hmm. is what's going to cool your sweat off and give you that kind of those natural mechanisms of cooling off. Having skin tight clothing, especially dark colors, is only going to make you hotter. You're going to, Hannah mentioned earlier, it's like The Rock is like hiking up through a convection oven. Doing it in athleisure is like you're a baked potato in that oven.
Exactly. So many of the search and rescues that we get, especially for women, are wearing black leggings. Like mm-hmm. it's every time. I don't know what horrible person was responsible for marketing black leggings as like workout attire, especially in the environment, but it's not.
It's not
worth it. Look dorky, be safe. And then hats. I didn't talk about hats, but put on a hat. That's it.
And then to piggyback on something else Hannah said, it's not just about day of preparation. It's about what you do a few days before. Hydrating is not going to do you any good if you drink a bottle of water that morning and then you go hiking 30 minutes later. And I know this makes it sound like such an intense experience, but there's never going to be a downfall to being too prepared. You're never going to say, oh man, I feel so hydrated. Dang it. Like that's never going to be the answer that you give. So start drinking and thinking about what you're putting in your body days before your trip. If I eat a cheeseburger and then I drink a bunch of sodas and then I don't get good sleep and then I try to go on a hike, I'm not going to have a good time physically or mentally on that hike.
Yeah.
And so if I treat my body right and I watch what I'm putting into it beforehand, you're going to have so much more of an enjoyable time here and you're going to be able to take in those views. You're going to feel good enough to make it that extra step, to make it to the top or whatever your goals are.
No,
And then one last thing I want to mention, a lot of times here, people don't realize all of our elevated trails close 30 minutes after sunset. So that only leaves the loop trail open at nighttime. A lot of people love to come out to our area for stargazing in our beautiful dark skies, which is great. But there's a time and a place, and more so there's a place to do that and a place not to do that. And so a lot of people will hike out to a destination or up to a destination, like on top of one of the summits or other trails at sunset to get that beautiful view. But then they don't take into account that now they have to hike down in the dark, which is very dangerous. And that's where a lot of our after hours calls come from. Because if you think it's hard to get down the rock in general without injuring yourself, imagine doing it at night. I wouldn't even trust myself to do it at night. And even when we have guided programs with rangers that give you that opportunity, we have specialized gear that we use so that we can find our way back down with the group that you as a common person don't have and you shouldn't be using at our park because it's not allowed.
And also, like, how many day hikers are going to come to E-Rock for a day hike and bring a headlamp or anything? Probably nobody.
A surprising amount, because everyone wants to do the cave. That's the thing. Everyone thinks they want to do the cave, and then they look, and then we tell them what the cave is, and they do not want to do the cave anymore.
I think it's another great point that if you're trying to hydrate on the way to the trailhead or that morning, it's too late. You're not giving your body ample time to take in that liquid or the electrolytes or any of that stuff. And also, like, I don't know what y'all's opinions are. I'm a huge sun hoodie and hat person hiking. And maybe if it was natural zinc, I think is like a natural sun protectant for like sunscreen. But I don't want to rub chemicals all into my skin. And hey, I'm not saying that sunscreen is bad. I'm sure there's some natural products out there, but you know, just in general, if I don't have to use sunscreen, then I'm definitely going to use, you know, sun hoodies, hats, and those types of things. So yeah,
I mean, everyone hates sunscreen, right? That's the fact of the matter. So it's sticky, it's unpleasant, you have to reapply it a lot. I get that a lot from people who don't want to use sunscreen because they think it could be unhealthy or it's exposing them to unnecessary things. I also hear people who say that like sunscreen is a scam and it does the opposite for them. They get burned when they wear a sunscreen and they're fine when they don't. All of that is fine, but risking sun exposure, extreme sun exposure there are so many good alternatives. It's not worth it.
Yep. Sun hoodie.
Yeah.
We're out on the trail. What kind of wildlife can we expect to see there?
What time of day is it?
Let's say early in the morning, park just opened and I'm on the trail. It's sunrise happening.
Mm-hmm. You're going to hear a lot of birds, probably. Depending on the season, you're probably going to hear a lot of our doves. They're very loud. They're very noisy. You're also going to hear a lot of cardinals. And if you're lucky, you might hear or see a painted bunting if you're here during the summer months. In all likelihood, you're going to see some of our reptilian friends. So you're going to see our lizards waking up. You might see a water snake if you cross the low water crossing. You might see or hear a rattlesnake, depending on the time of day. They're usually pretty active in the mornings around here, and we do see them a fair amount. It's going to be our western diamondback. Excellent thing is they're excellent communicators, so they will warn you if you are too close. They'll let you know, which is nice. Probably some white-tailed deer. We got a lot of white-tailed deer wandering around the park. There's been a doe with her fawns up at maintenance recently. We get to see her in the morning every day. And
foxes.
Foxes, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've got a lot of gray foxes, I think a surprising amount. Night hikes pretty frequently, we hear them barking, especially during like the late fall season, which is really cool, a little bit scary if you've never heard a fox bark before. It's an experience and you should look it up. Coyotes, also, if it's sunrise, you will hear coyotes. You probably will not see them. And what else? Armadillo. You could see an armadillo. Yeah, they're crepuscular. They nosy around.
Yeah. I do like, this wasn't the question, but I do like visiting natural spaces either early in the morning or around sunset and dusk, because that's when everyone comes out to play, depending on what their lifestyle is and what they're out doing. But that's when you're going to see the most and when you're going to hear the most. Mm-hmm. And then especially animals are smart. So they have picked up on our on our cues and on our patterns. So they know early in the morning, right when maintenance is getting there or before, that's when the park is the quietest. And that's when they can come out and they can get their snacks, get their water, move shelters, whatever it may be. And then again, they know, okay, so like E-Rock, 92% day use. At 5 o'clock, they know the majority of people are leaving the park and it's just going to be a few of our campers. So that's when they get to come out again. And so that's when you get to see the most.
The other critter that you're probably going to see no matter what time of day is going to be our rock squirrels. Mm-hmm. So our rock squirrels are a really special species of squirrel that we have here. They like to live in the rock clusters and rocky areas up on the summit trail. They are either partially or fully like a dark brown, almost black color. And they are really chunky and fat. And they will wander around looking for food. They get a little bit bigger than our tree squirrels because they are not as picky as they are with eating. So rock squirrels will eat pretty much anything they can get their little paws on. That includes things both living and dead. So they will prey on carrion if they have to. And they will... They're pretty intense. They're very wily. They're a wily animal. And we see them on the summit a lot. When people see them, they always ask if they're gophers or some sort of other small rodent-like creature. But they're a squirrel. They're just not a tree squirrel.
And then depending on seasonality and then also weather patterns, that will affect any of our frog buddies, our toads, or any bugs that you might see. You might see them in different stages. You might come 1 month and see a lot of larval forms or caterpillars. You might come the next month, and then now we have an abundance of butterflies or moths, depending on what time you come. So it really just, it's different here at the Rock every day that you come, just depending on what's going on around us.
It's pretty cool.
So, Claire, you're into insects. Mm-hmm. So what is that, insector? You're an insector or a, what is the fancy word for?
Oh, she's a bug girl.
Bug girl.
All right. Yeah. I like insector.
It sounds very official.
Yeah. So being an insector, heard it here first on the Trailblazing Texas podcast. What time of month is the best for that type of activities? Like bug looking, finding, tracking?
Yeah, it depends. I've also only been here 6 months, so I can't give you a fully accurate answer yet. I can tell you this month I've seen the most praying mantids that I've ever seen in the park. So that's been very
really?
Exciting. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of moths and butterflies, your flying pretty boys, around lately and in the summer.
Dragonflies,
there's been a lot. So really, it just depends on what kind of bugs you're into, because then there's going to be a season for it of when you're going to see that. But they're all exciting. So I've been every month excited because there's been a new friend that I see most often. And this month happens to be mantids, which is pretty cool.
Nice. And, you know, will be episodes in the low 80s, and I've never had someone that had an insect interest, so I think it's important that we, you know, some of the listeners are definitely into it, so thank you for that.
You should advise your listeners to come to Moth Madness, which is Claire's mothing campfire chat. It's going to be once a month for the next 3 months. She's going to be catching bugs, and we're going to look at them. Mm-hmm. We also have a bug out program that I do pretty frequently. That's an entomology program. We let kids run around with nets, try to see what they can come up with, and then we identify it. So,
oh wow, I definitely have to come up and make that for sure. So this is a very important question. And how do y'all manage all the recreational activities at the park, the hiking, the climbing, the you know, all your programs, but and all the crowds, because it's such a special place, with the efforts of trying to conserve it and you know, save it for future generations?
That's definitely a hard balance that we try every day to obtain. A lot of it is through education, whether that's right when they enter our area and our staff up front at headquarters, they're giving out information of either where to go, where not to go, what's suitable for people, and kind of curating their experience based off that 30-second interaction of how can I give this person the best advice individually to make their day and to make sure they have a safe time, not only for themselves, but also for our natural area. Another good way is through education of Hannah's programs. If you want to go out and you want to learn something that's very niche, and she's going to have a topic each time and she's going to go through it unless she's doing some sort of roving activity. And then all of our rangers are kind of on the same page that from the public's eyes, we're all just park rangers. It's not like they look at us and they see, oh, assistant, interpreter, lead ranger. They just see us as park rangers. So all of us do a really good job at staying up to date, learning from Hannah, learning from management, and upfront of what's going on in the park so that we can be prepared whenever anyone has questions. Or if we're just driving by, we notice someone's doing something wrong, we can correct them in a way that has that educational information along with it. Instead of just saying no, we can say, hey, can I redirect you because of XYZ? And we can have that message kind of threaded in there. And so it's kind of an art form, which is difficult because you are also balancing that with customer service, but it's something we practice every day.
For sure. It's our biggest, our number one goal when it comes to recreation is that we are providing more than a recreational experience. So we are connecting people with this natural site and its cultural and natural resources. And hopefully if we can make that connection, they will want to protect it. They'll want to conserve it. They'll want to find out a little bit more. This is something that we call the staircase to stewardship. It starts right here, and it's just enjoying the park, right? That's it. And then you take the next step and you say, hey, I see a piece of trash. I really enjoy this park. I kind of want to pick it up. I don't want it to be dirty, right? You take the next step. You want to learn more about it. You take the next step. You want to learn how you can protect other natural areas and so on and so forth. And that ranger to visitor interaction is really important. But we also do a lot of listening, right? We can't be everywhere at once. And our public does a really good job of letting us know whenever there are things we should be concerned about. Climbing community is a really great example of that because they are in places that that we don't always see, right? Because they're up on top of boulders and in nooks and crannies and crevices. If they see some place that has been graffitied or if they see some place that has been like overrun with litter, they are the first people to shoot us an email with a little pin drop and say, hey, this is something you should be aware of. We saw this at this place. We need your help getting it fixed. Amazing. And then the last thing is that we are actually bringing on a new position at the park. This is really exciting. We had a new position open up, which is the resource specialist. And this person is going to be pretty much entirely dedicated to the natural resource management at Enchanted Rock. So they're going to be doing a lot of the traditional like field work when we think about managing invasive species, trying to keep the park in good shape for prescribed burns, organizing prescribed burns and conservation hunts. Right now we have me, the second half of my job title is interpreter / resource specialist, but having a full-time position that is entirely focused on resource management is something that we are all so, so excited about. And something that's very, very necessary with the recent acquisition of the 3,600 acres that we got in the last year. So.
That's one thing that shocked me is the amount of hats that y'all wear in it. So that to me is wonderful news that you know, that some of that responsibility is taken off somebody so they can focus on this. And then, you know, you have someone that's directly going to focus on those aspects. But yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So are y'all already taking applications?
So that posting has already been closed, actually.
Oh,
yeah, so we're a little bit further along in the process, but we are
nice.
We're really excited.
Nice. All right, so as a for the visitors, what is the best time of year for you think hiking, photography, or just enjoying the views? I got to say now, right? September, October, November.
The fall is really, really special here. Again, yeah. I always, whenever people ask me this question, I always say that it's not what time of year, it's what time of day. Yeah. Dusk and dawn, like Claire said, the fall is really great here. I'm a little more biased towards the fall than the spring. I know that Central Texas is beautiful in the spring. We have a lot of bluebonnets. On top of the rock, though, we also have a lot of wind. Spring here is like standing in a wind tunnel, essentially, when you're on top of the rock. It is comedic how windy it gets up there. Fall is a little more peaceful. And we don't have a whole lot of fall color, but we do have some cedar elms and flame leaf sumacs. And I don't know, there's nothing better, in my opinion, than driving into a park and you already have that like late afternoon sun kind of feel to it. The sun's not right overhead. It's kind of casting shadows. Everything's a little bit golden. You smell campfire smoke and you can hear like scouts playing in the campground. Like, fall as an entire environment is really, really nice here. And that's when that's our highest time of visitation. So we recommend fall. If you're going to come in fall, you need to make a reservation. No matter what day of the week you're coming, no matter what time of day you're planning on coming, just go ahead and plan ahead, make that reservation, and then come to the park whenever you want. Yeah.
So what about stargazing? How popular?
What about stargazing, Jason? Stargazing is our most popular activity after hiking the summit. We offer a lot of programming specific for stargazing. So starting in October, we're going to have one star party a month all the way through the rest of 2025, which is really exciting. Star parties are where astronomy groups or astronomers bring out their telescopes. They're very nice, very fancy telescopes. And the general public gets to come and get an introduction to astronomy with the ranger, which is me. And then they get to wander around and they get to look through these several thousand dollar telescopes and experience Bortle 3 night skies through a telescope, which is, it's a really good opportunity, especially if you're coming from Austin, San Antonio, even Houston, these places that have a lot of light pollution, you don't have a lot of stars. We're a really great option because we are accessible. We're only 2 hours away from pretty much all of them, except for Houston. Sorry, Houston. And we have considerably darker skies than a lot of Central Texas. So stargazing is great. We also offer introduction to astronomy classes, and I usually include stargazing as part of all of my night hikes, just because, man, if you're here at night, it's hard not to. It catches the eye. It's really incredible. And right now, August and September is the best time to see the Milky Way at Enchanted Rock. So that's really been a really cool feature of the last couple of night hikes I've done, is you get people who've never seen the Milky Way before, and you get to watch, you get to experience them see the Milky Way for the first time in their lives. And they're sometimes a little bit disappointed because they expect it to be like purple and violet and like the long image astrophotography. It's not that. It's clouds that are not clouds. It's a long band of clouds in the sky, essentially. It is still really special, though.
Nice. So I'm a climber. And what are the, are there any specific guidelines for people that want to climb in the park? And I'm assuming that it's all bouldering, or is there top rope, lead?
We've got some top rope on the backside of the rock, but most of our climbing is going to be bouldering. Actually, that's not true. That's not true, is it? Neither of us are climbers. Let me preface this conversation by saying neither of us are climbers. We have a lot of climbing opportunities. We also have a couple of guide companies that come out here. If you're interested in climbing and you don't know where to start, or you just want to go with someone who knows where they're going at Enchanted Rock, we do have two different guide companies that do trips out really frequently, especially in the fall. And those climbing routes are all over the place. Climbing is a really important part of our history. It's an important part of our existing, like, regular visitor culture today, because climbers are going to be our, pretty often, our most repeat customers. We are very familiar with the climbing community at Enchanted Rock. We see them weekly, monthly, really often. And actually, the Friends of Enchanted Rock group, which is our nonprofit group that's associated with Enchanted Rock, was founded by climbers. So.
Oh, nice.
It's big. Yeah.
We do have a small blurb on our website, I believe. And if not, it's on the State Parks website. But just know, putting in your own holds or own permanent fixtures, there's a lot of bouldering available, so those pre-existing natural places for holds. And then
there are some routes already set.
There are. I was trying to think where they were, and I can't off the top of my head.
It's the backside of the rock.
That's why I don't think about it, because it's scary back there.
We also have a climbing manual available for sale in our gift shop. The Dome Driver's Manual, if you can get your hands on that one, that's the real good one. But we've got a lot of resources available. If that's something you're interested in, I recommend looking there and on our website. Claire and I are a little bit short on our climbing know-how.
All right. So to the listeners, if you're a climber, research, research, research. But I was shocked. I think the second time that I was at E-Rock, I was hiking the loop around Enchanted Rock, and we were about to get back to the car, and people were walking with the fall pads, the crash pads. Mm-hmm. And I was like, are you guys going bouldering? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, what? I had no idea. And yeah, and it doing some research, it's pretty big there. You know, the climbing and I don't know what you call it, the climbing scene, I guess, is for lack of a better word. All right, what about camping options? What options are available in the park?
Primitive options. There's spots in our camping loop where you can pull up, you park, and it's just a short, quick walk to your campsite. And the shower building, restroom building's right there. Or we also have more kind of backcountry primitive spots where you'll hike out on the loop trail to get to your camp spot. Some of them are 2 miles out. There's composting toilets back there. So it just kind of depends on what experience you're looking for.
If you've never been like backpacking before, if you're looking for like an entryway point, we've got some pretty accessible backcountry options, like options. Like Claire said, so our Walnut Springs camping loop is one of our super primitive sites. That's 1.5 miles out on loop trail, which is a flat trail. It's pretty easy to access, and there is a composting toilet. And then the other one is Moss Lake, which is about 2.5 miles out. That one also has a composting toilet. It's a little bit further if you're looking to be more remote. But if you're like, I just want to try backpacking, I've never done it before, I don't really want to start somewhere really remote, especially if I'm by myself, Enchanted Rock has a great option for that.
So you don't make people use wag bags? You should.
No, we do not.
All right, let's say it's not October and I forgot to make a camping reservation. Am I out of luck? Can I show up and be on a waiting list?
We don't have any sort of wait list. And the information that y'all see on the reservation side is the same information and the same timely information that we see. So we don't have any sort of secrets that we're holding back. If you are like, I checked and there's nothing, can you check? I'm going to see the same thing that you do. Yeah. If it's the weekend, maybe not. If it's the weekday, there's a better possibility. But still, if you're going to pack up your stuff, if you're going to drive all the way out here, why not go ahead and make sure that you're ready to go? And then also, that's a good kickback to something that I was wanting to say earlier. If you are stargazing, a lot of times people don't, especially if they're new to Enchanted Rock, they don't realize how much time they're going to hang out here and how beautiful it is. So if you're going to stargaze, plan on staying, whether it's in our park or in a neighboring town, plan on making some sort of overnight arrangements if you have any sort of drive more than an hour, I would say. It's not worth it. We have so many whitetail in our county that it's not worth trying to navigate at night that drive home. And then our day use ends at 10 p.m. And so a lot of times if you're coming for stargazing, you want to stay longer than that. So go ahead and make that camping reservation, and that allows you to stay past 10 o'clock.
So one thing I learned, I had Aaron with Purtis Creek, and all the wonderful things that they're doing for people with disabilities and accessibility features, I was floored. And the passion that he had for these projects, what are some of the things that EROC has for, you know, people with disabilities or, you know, in wheelchairs to maybe kind of navigate through some of, I don't know, trails or trailheads or any of that stuff?
We don't have a lot to offer. Our park at the moment is not very accessible.
At the moment.
But we are starting to develop out the new properties. So hopefully we do have that in the forefront of our minds. But then also, luckily, we have a team here that's really passionate about it. That's actually a conversation we've had multiple times in the last several months of ideas of how we can help this problem. Because, as you know, our park has a lot of elevated spots. There's a lot of decomposed granite, which is hard to navigate for anyone, let alone from an accessibility standpoint. We did have the pleasure of we had a blind and deaf community group come out here. And Hannah led a hike for them, and we got to talk with them a lot and get a lot of good feedback, which was great for us. We got to see firsthand what would help them. And so we had a talk just a couple days ago of some things that we might be able to instill on our main property here that at first glance we didn't think there was exponential room for improvement for the means that we're working with. And now we're seeing there are opportunities that we can take advantage of. And luckily, we're excited about doing it. So as long as we have the ideas, we have the feedback, we're willing to look into it and try to make it happen.
We currently have a single campsite that is wheelchair accessible. We got one. Our bathrooms are ADA compliant, so they are usable if you're in a mobility device. And then last thing, this is kind of cool. This is not something that I thought of as an accessibility feature until we had that hiking group come out. We have a topographic relief of Enchanted Rock and the surrounding domes at our gazebo right at Summit Trail. So this is just, it's like a statue. It's a bronze detailed map of the dome. And then it's got the Summit Trail on it. And it's got a little star where the gazebo is. And getting to see how much of an aid that was for people with visual impairments was really, it was super surprising for me. And it was really helpful feedback to just think about that as an accessibility feature. So if you can't see the Granite Dome yourself, you can still experience it by exploring that relief map with your hands or having someone describe it to you. There are a lot of ways to experience Enchanted Rock. We all experience Enchanted Rock differently, and we are really excited about expanding the opportunities for everyone to get to experience this place.
Yeah, and that's one thing that was really came across with all the state parks, and even, you know, you guys represent state park as a whole, and that the passion that Texas Parks and Wildlife have for making as best as possible, you know, including these accessibility features, you know, and there was a few state parks that the buildings are just old. You know, they were built in the 1920s and 30s, and there wasn't a lot that they could do, but that they didn't allow that to be a blocker. You know, there's other ways, like, you know, what you were just talking about, to improve the visit for people with disabilities. So that's awesome to hear, and y'all keep it up for sure.
There's opportunities, even if they aren't explicitly listed. So if you are interested in coming to a park program, but you are deaf or you're blind, you can request an accommodation. You just have to email the park ahead of time, and they will arrange something for you. That goes for also the track chairs, the Huckleberry Hikers, and the Eco Rovers, all of those like trail-friendly wheelchairs. We have partnerships with our regional. So even though the park itself does not house any of those equipment, if you give us advance notice, we can ask our region in order to borrow one, and we can have it ready for you if that's something you're interested in.
And if you're ever coming out to our area and not sure how you're going to navigate it, please give us a call, because if you have any sort of questions, we can help. We might not know what details you're needing, but ask us and we will provide it. If you want to know what the first, say, quarter mile or the first mile of a certain trail looks like, we can describe it to you, or we can tell you, you know, the route to get to X marks the spot that you want to go see. And we can work with you to make your experience, one, better for you to come out and more attainable to reach that goal, but two, help alleviate some of those nerves and you not having to plan it out and bear that load all by yourself. Like, let us take some of those worries off your plate, because we know this site. So we can provide that information for you if that makes your visit that much easier and enjoyable.
Nice. So we have, as hikers, have a partnership. So are there any upcoming improvements or projects that are underway at the park?
Jason, always. What kind of question is that?
Well, you know what? Hopefully it's a fastball right down the middle, and you have that bat just waiting for it, and you just crank it right out of the park.
Get in there, Claire.
Our current big project on the main property is our loop trail restoration. So our loop trail has been violently eroded out. That's how eroded.
That's the adjective you're using?
Violently eroded out with past rain and then just years of wear and tear and love that it's received. It is a decomposed granite trail. So when weather events happen, that decomposed granite likes to get out of here and move anywhere else but the trail. So with that, there's a lot of eroded spots out. There's a lot of hazards when you're walking, even when we're driving UTVs on any sort of search and rescues or maintenance and management back there. So what efforts that we've been putting forth is at least twice a month, every currently first and third Friday, but during our busy season, we're going to shift those to Thursdays. We have trail maintenance mornings, which is really just the first half of the day of us going out to try to repair some of these extreme washouts, make the trail easier to navigate, easier to walk on, and easier for us to get vehicles back there if we need. This is going to be an ongoing project that has been on the list for years, and it's going to stay on the list for a while because it's a 4.6 mile trail. It's a trail that gets used every day. We can't work on it on the weekends when we're busy and have trailers and of material and tractors back there and UTVs. And it's also very dependent on volunteers. We are a, we're a very small team for how much we're trying to manage and be in charge of right now. And we've only expanded and are growing with that. And while we do have some new positions and we're going to grow slightly, it doesn't compare to the amount of work we have and the amount of work that still needs to be done to repair our main property. And so we're super dependent on volunteers because sometimes it's just one or two rangers out there, depending on people taking leave, people out sick, people allocated to other projects, other people out here. We're also starting to develop our new properties and have our contractor in place. And so sometimes staff there are now being pulled to open certain facilities or show them where certain things are. And so staff is being pulled in all directions. And so volunteers are, or the availability of volunteers are really dependent on how fast moving this project will be. But it's been something that Hannah and I have kind of been our passion project lately because that trail means a lot to us. It means a lot to the guests that come to visit it. So seeing it kind of go downhill these past couple months with all the rain that we've received, it's in dire need. And so we're patching it slowly but surely.
And then there's also the additional 3,600 acres that we acquired in the last year that's getting integrated into the main park. So all of those projects are too big and above our heads for us to talk about, but keep an eye out on Enchanted Rock. There are things happening. Things will be changing. This park will not look the same in the next
4 years.
Single year. Yeah.
Single year. Yeah.
Wow. So how do you think visiting a place like E-Rock connect people more deeply to Texas itself?
That's a great question.
That's a good question.
I like that question, actually.
It's twofold. I mean, there's a lot of good, there's a lot of good answers to it. Enchanted Rock is an iconic part of the Texas landscape, specifically in the Hill Country. People have been drawn to it for thousands of years. We have a history of human habitation that dates back 12,000 years. And we know that based on all the artifacts that we've found in the past and that we're still finding today. This has been a special place to people who live in Texas way before Texas was Texas, right? This is Enchanted Rock precedes all of it. It's 1.1 billion years old. And I think that connection with just the human history of this place alone is huge. I think also the dark sky connection is a big thing. Dark skies and access to sites with dark skies is it's a cultural connection, right? Our ancestors had a much closer relationship with the night sky than we do today, and they relied on it a lot more heavily for things like knowing when to plant certain crops or harvest certain crops or move to certain locations or hunt certain game. The skies were a huge factor in people's lives until very, very recently. And I think that with the growing development in Texas and the light pollution that's just popped up absolutely everywhere, preserving and having these sites where we can go and connect with our roots and with our history is really, really important. It is of the utmost importance, if you ask me. What else you got? Do you have anything else?
Claire, you got anything?
It's also hot and it's hard. Okay. Everything that lives here is so tough and resilient and uniquely beautiful and pokey and mean and awesome. And it's the epitome of Texas. Like I don't know.
I love it.
It's a harsh landscape, right? Nothing in here is rooting for you. You have to make it work. And I think there's something so beautiful and independent and strong about that. And whenever I think of home, whenever I think of Texas, I think of Enchanted Rock. And I think that that's the case for a lot of people, especially locally and especially for our staff.
I had Leah, a park ranger at the Guadalupe Mountains. I've known her for, 4 or 5 years. And, you know, she's always checking me in and asking me what I'm going to do. And then usually I'll tell her and she's like, you know, at your age, are you sure you want to do that? So, you know, she's my sounding board. And she said it like perfectly. And I also thinking about, like, you know, this part two of our episode, I think it also sums up Enchanted Rock as well. You have to earn the experience. It's not just inviting, you know, you don't have like these massive roads through the park where you can just sightsee and stuff. Like, no, you have to get out in it and you have to, you earn your experience. You earn the love of the park. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, you're 100% right.
That's a great way to put it.
We are not, quite literally, not just a walk in the park.
Yeah.
Exactly. So as we kind of start to wrap up the last few questions, what do you think families usually take away from a visit at the park?
It sounds cheesy, but memories. What you put into the park is what you get out. If you're willing to prepare to, you know, go across our whole daunting 4.6-mile loop trail, you're going to have so many more experiences through that. You're going to see more things. You're going to see more species of cacti. You're going to see different animals that you might see on another trail. If you are willing to go up the 40-flight equivalent of up the summit, you're going to be rewarded with that view, kind of to piggyback on what that message you were just hinting at. And families, we've seen families with little teeny tiny kiddos make it all the way up the rock. And sometimes, you know, they're grumpy, they're tired, they're sad, they're hot, they want to go down. And then by the time they get down, they're so excited because they saw something really cool, or, you know, they hit that goal and they feel proud of themselves, or they're done. So now they go get to get their snow cone from Kona Ice, and that makes everyone else feel better as well. And so there's always something that people take away, whether it's an experience together, a memory of something that you saw, something that you experienced, something that you feel. But everyone has something special to say about this place, which makes it super exciting and makes you very proud to work here.
Nice. Today I had the Hiking Rev on the podcast, and he's a big YouTuber. He's got a huge presence, and he's out in California, and I've been following him for a while, and we were talking about the Guads a little bit, and I don't know that I've ever been to the park and didn't cry. It means that whether she broke me, whether all the pokey things have just destroyed my legs because I don't wear long pants.
Gotta get on that, you know,
I know, but I just can't. I don't know why. Or it's, you know, I'm leaving the park. I pull off the side of the road, probably about 20 miles, 10 miles away from the park. And I just get my Outback in the hatchback, open it up and just look at her. And, you know, I always question, like, is this the last time, the last experience I'll ever have? And, you know, I'm getting old. I'm in my 50s. Of course, hopefully I have a lot more hiking years to go, but you know, you never know when it's going to be the last time. And it's emotional. That place means so much to me. And yeah, it's pretty crazy. So, all right. Well, I had a couple of questions about volunteers, but I think we touched on them. So to the listeners and really to any park, get involved if you can. There's friendship groups that you can find. If you don't even know what that is or how to get connected, call the park. Call Claire, call Hannah, call Doug, and just say, how can I get connected to the park? You know, whether maybe you're too busy to go out and volunteer, but certainly donations, you know, like the park can always use help, whether it's volunteers, donations. So there's no excuses. And so second to last question. This is for both of you. Both of the last questions will be for both of you. Hannah, if someone just had one afternoon at the park, what is a perfect way to spend it?
What time of year is it?
She needs
to I know, in the time of day. Okay, hold on.
You said the afternoon. If it's August, it's, the perfect thing to do is to sit in the gazebo and not do anything.
It is October 17th. At 5:37 in the morning.
5:37 in the morning?
I thought it was the afternoon.
I thought you said it was the afternoon.
Okay, a day there. Spend the day there.
A trip. There's a trip to the park.
I think.
I spent the night there, so I can start whenever I want. What? And I'm leaving that day. How am I going to spend? What is the best way to spend the last day at E-Rock?
I think the best way to do it. I think you start with a sunrise summit hike. You come down on your way back down. You go ahead and you take Echo Canyon. You go all the way down through that boulder field. Then you poke your way around. By that time, you're going to be getting into the hotter part of the day. You're going to be in the shadier part of the park. From Echo Canyon, you take the base trail, right? Base trail kind of runs along Sandy for a little bit. You get to see some of the water. You get to see some of the water animals and plants. And then you take lunch, where base trail meets Turkey Pass. There's like in the back part of that, there's some really like pretty sloped, like kind of flattish areas. There's also a bathroom at Crystal Hill that you'll pass as you go from base to Turkey Pass. Go to the bathroom there, come out, keep hiking, take your lunch at the very beginning of Turkey Pass, and then hike up and you'll be done. You'll come up Turkey Pass, out to front side, back at the gazebo. You should be done around, I would say, 2:30 or 3-ish.
We started at 5 in the morning?
We started at 5 in the morning.
I think before that.
You think before that? Okay, well, one.
Depends how leisurely your lunch is.
It does depend how leisurely your lunch is.
So like let's say I had 3 tuna packs.
If you had 3 tuna packets,
you might be rolling at 12:30.
Seriously. It's power food right there.
That's right.
Yeah, and then you'd finish early afternoon-ish at the gazebo. What we always tell people to do, and this isn't, I shouldn't say this on a hiking podcast, but go into Fredericksburg and have lunch, have a cold drink, cool off a little bit in the AC, then come back.
You mean wine?
That's not what we said.
Blanket and stargaze.
Nice. Claire, your turn.
I'm going to set my own scene.
Yeah, Hannah had to use my scene. Well, how original.
Whatever.
So I would plan my visit to where it's after the park has had a good shower, because my favorite activities come a few days after we've had rain. And so I would probably start at the crossing between the low water crossing between our parking lots 1 and 2, because we have these concrete stepping stones there and we have these little water snakes that like to hang out, and they'll hang out with their mouths open and wait for little minnows to come down. And they look so cute because 3/4 of their body's in the water and then just their necks are out, and they look so lazy, and you'll see little minnows go by and they have like 3-second late reactions and they just look goofy and they're so cute to watch.
Yep.
I would probably go on a little hikey hike. I like the route that Hannah took.
Or would you do catfish?
After I used the restroom at Crystal Hill, instead of finishing that way, I would finish Loop Trail, because at that point towards your left-hand side, there's this secret spot that's about to not be secret called Catfish Hole.
We've never said it on socials. It's not on the trails.
I might regret saying it here first.
Catfish Hole.
Don't say it too loud for the people.
But when I was an intern, the park police officer told me about it and the interpreter showed me it. And then when I came back 4 years later, no one had ever heard of Catfish Hole. And I went back and found it myself. And now we like it. We like it again. It's back in vogue.
But it's a perfect little spot, because I like to go there and either bring a book or I'll bring my headphones with an audiobook. And there's this perfect little lay down rock right next to the stream. And then you can look up and you have this awesome view of a summit. Who is that?
It's Freshman.
Freshman Mountain. And you can look at it. And it's just, it's different to see a summited spot from a laying down position, because you see how amazing exfoliating domes are. And to see these huge chunks of granite that are just sitting there and they're not even thinking about budging or moving. And from that angle, it just looks wild. And so it's really cool. There's always an abundance of flowers down there and little frogs and minnows and tadpoles and everything, because that creek is almost always present over there. Mm-hmm. There's always some sort of water source. And then I would take loop and then hike back. And then also on that section of loop that you're going to finish out your hike with, if it's a few days after a rain, there's ample stretches of the bee brush, which I think we might have mentioned last time, but it's my favorite smell. It's a native kind of bushy plant here, and it just looks kind of scraggly brown and green at first glance, but then anytime after a rain, it blossoms these little white flower bunches, and it's the best smell ever. Mm-hmm. And you'll hike through and you just get hit. You don't even have to go up to smell it. It just fills the entire air and it just smells so lovely. But between the snakes, the bee brush, and then getting to see all the little toads and all the little creeks that form in the rock and through the granite cracks, you'll see teeny tiny waterfalls that form that no one would ever notice unless you stop and take the time to look at these little spaces, would be the perfect afternoon to me. It's just finding my own little tiny spot that makes you think, I wonder if anyone's ever stopped and looked at this one little rock that makes this little tiny waterfall, or look at this one little hole in the tree that looks like a little fairy house, or, you know, whatever those little tiny micro ecosystems are that mean the world to some other creature.
Nice. And speaking of Fredericksburg, do you ever go listen to music in Fredericksburg? My favorite artist ever in the world is Jake Martin, and he plays in Fredericksburg. If you haven't seen him, you have to go check him out. But I think he's originally from Oklahoma, but every time we go to Fredericksburg, we go two or three times a year for the refreshments that, you know, we go definitely spend at least one day listening to him. All right, Hannah, close your ears because you'll probably steal Claire's answer. Sell the listeners the park. Why should they have Enchanted Rock as a must on their bucket list for this upcoming amazing season, October, November, December? Why does it need to be there?
I think it needs to be on your bucket list because we can assure you that whatever experience you have is not going to match anyone else's. There's a lot of spaces that you go to and they're great to go to, but everyone's going for the same thing. Everyone's going to have the same experience, which is fine if it's a great experience. Good for you. I'm glad you had it. But our park, as we've mentioned, there's so many nooks and crannies of it. Yes, go on top of the summit, but there's so many spots you can go and so many things you can see, and it's changing year around. So no matter when you come, even if you come here every month for an entire year, you're going to have a different experience every time. And that's something special that you can hold for yourself, especially in this day and age where everything is very automated. Everything is very washed out a little bit of just, we're all having a lot of the same experiences. To me, it means a lot to go someplace and have something of my own, have memories of my own, have sights of my own, or whatever it may be. And so I think it's really special, and that's bucket list worthy, that you can come here and you can have something of your own.
All right, Hannah, what about you? Sell us the park. Why should this park be on a Texas hiker's bucket list?
Enchanted Rock is a quintessentially Texas place to visit, especially in the fall. And we have a really wide variety of things to experience and places to explore. The fall is really special because it's a season of change here. And Enchanted Rock is, if nothing else, it's the story of change, right? We have this incredible example of erosion and weathering and even the deposition in Sandy Creek happening right before our very eyes. When you look at Enchanted Rock, you can't help but think about, has this always looked the way it has? Like, is this current iteration of it the same thing that people were looking at 10,000 years ago? And it's not. It's always, always changing on a microscopic level. The granite itself tells a brilliant story about Texas history and the way that Texas itself has changed based on the placement of the tectonic plates. And in the fall, we think about the biological change. So we have a lot of trees changing colors. We have the constellation cycles shifting between the summer constellations and the winter constellations. You get a little bit of everything. You get to try everything, and no day is going to be exactly the same because Texas falls are rapid fire, right? One day it's 75 degrees, the next day it's 30. There's no way to tell which day you're going to get. I think that's part of the magic. You just try to prepare for it as best that you can and take in as much of the experience as you possibly can safely.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
I have a fall plug.
What's your fall plug?
Sometimes fall gets a bad rap because all the leaves fall off and everything looks brown and not super fun compared to spring. But a really cool thing about fall here is then your view is a lot wider.
Yeah.
And so, like in the spring or in the summer when you're going, especially on our surrounding or like loop trail, you're not going to get a lot of good side angles of different summits. You're going to see your path and maybe a little bit out or a little holes here and there. But in the fall when everything falls off and then in the winter, you get such a clear view from all angles when you're on trails, which is a hidden little gem or like a silver lining to, yeah, everything might look a little sad and dead at first glance, but it opens up for you to be able to expand and see further.
Well, sad to say it has come to an end. I want to thank you both for taking the time out of your busy days. Again, to the listeners, we almost had a rescue when we first started, so you guys are busy, and I can't thank you enough. Hope you had a good time, and thank you. And, you know, I always say this, and it's stupid. Like, I don't have the, I guess it's vernacular, the words to let you know how much I appreciate it, but I do from the bottom of my heart. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. It was our pleasure. Thanks for having us. We're you got friends at E-Rock if you're ever in the neighborhood.
Oh, I'll let you definitely let you know. And remember, the fine print, we're going to be hitting the trail together.
Thank you on a hike.
Yep, we're on it. We're ready. We're going to make you do so much. You're going to be bad.
Yeah.
I'm a quad hiker. There's nothing that you can put me through that I haven't already done.
That's probably true.
We're going to time you on the summit after that statement.
Ooh, yeah. We're going to make you do a full day of hiking, and then we're going to time you on summit. Yeah.
Bring it.
Perfect.
Again, thank you, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Bye. You too.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.